Hi, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. It's our next to last show of the year. We're going to do one next week. This week we will talk about basically Jon Rahm to live, state of pro golf, the investor stuff, but really kind of the sentiment around professional golf right now from not people who are involved with it, but the people who are watching it and consuming it. I think that's really kind of important to talk about, so we will get to that in this episode. And then Mark Wang is our guest. He's the head man at Hilton Grand Vacations. He's going to talk to us about the LPGA season opener. They're having their media day when we record this interview down in Orlando at Lake Nona. It's a great place to play there a couple times, but the tournament is starting to grow in stature, and they've committed some more resources to it. So we're going to talk to Mark about that as we get ready for the 2024 season. You can get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Ballingy Golf. If you want to get a hold of me in either of those places, happy to talk to you on any of those platforms. I mean, I've spent a lot of time talking about the machinations of Rahm to live, the public investment fund negotiation with the PGA Tour, all of this type of stuff. We talked about it on my daily podcast, Two Out the First, kind of the more specifics of it all. And that's not really what I want to get into here as much, because if you want to talk about the details, you want to get in the weeds on it, then absolutely listen to that show. It's very in the weeds, on the specifics on how the negotiations work, what might happen next, trying to work through all that type of stuff. And I think we've done a pretty good job over the last 6 months, especially, but certainly the last year and a half of kind of talking about what could happen, here's what could trigger, all that stuff. And we've covered that pretty extensively. But it feels like to me, Rahm going to live was the nadir for professional golf. The lowest of low points. It just hit a little bit differently, I think, for me. It hit a little differently, it seemed, in sentiment for a lot of fans. And I think the response to Rahm's announcement tells you a lot about where golf is, where professional golf is. I don't mean recreational golf. I mean professional golf. Rahm makes this announcement, comes out on Fox News. He's doing an interview with Brett Baer, the kind of preview shot leading into the interview. It looks like he's doing a hostage video. He does the interview with David Faraday, that airs online. He does a conference call with some media, all the talking points. I want to grow golf. I want a platform. Liv's been innovative. And all the reality is, it's about the money. It's about getting to the amount of money to which Rahm could not have said no. And then maybe 5% or less influence, if I was going to guess, that it had to do with governance issues on the PGA Tour, maybe not being treated as the best guy, those types of things. Maybe figuring, well, if Dustin Johnson got that kind of money, or Brooks Koepka got that kind of money, I deserve more. I'm going to take my shot here. Lots of different pieces of that. But I think the overwhelming portion of this was, it's money. And with the dollar figures being thrown out there in the $300 million range, and then the $600 million top end, which is really more hypothetical. You get the Live franchise at 25% in that, and it could be worth up to $300 million. It's currently worth zero, so there's that. But even still, if you're a third of the way to being a billionaire because you signed a piece of paper, that's still an incredible amount of money. And I think the reaction for the overwhelming portion of people was to be turned off by that, and turned off into what golf has become in a very short period of time. And I think part of that's timing. Part of that was, a lot of people reacted that maybe haven't been following this, and God bless you because you've been spared. But if you haven't been following this in the weeds as much over the last 2 years, much less the last 6 months, the reaction for a lot of those people is, I thought they already merged. I thought this was done. And instead, it's gotten worse. Now it's back to, we're back in. like that all the pain is back, you know, people leaving and all that type of stuff. No, people don't want that. People don't want to deal with that. And then you get the money piece of it, and it's clear that this was a power play. And you signed a guy who, in Rahm, again, another guy who's kind of spoken out against the LIV format, and not necessarily against the players who went to LIV, but against the format and what it presents, and didn't like it. Now he's spitballing the talking points about how it's innovative and stuff. It just felt like all of that kind of came together in that moment, and then the fan reaction was, screw this. Screw everybody. This sucks. I hate it. I'm out. If you thought before that a lot of people going, well, I just watch the majors now because I'm turned off by pro golf. If you think that was a minority, it's going to be a bigger minority or a bigger crowd of people who are going to feel that way. And poll after online poll, and I know they're not scientific. I'm not worried about, I don't know who's answering them, but it felt like the overwhelming sentiment in these multiple ones that I saw were, I'm going to watch less golf. I'm not interested in watching LIV golf because John Rahm's there. Goodbye. And the net result for the Saudis is, hey, they've got a big bargaining chip. That's great. But it may not have gotten them many, if any, net viewers for their next season. They bought leverage. They didn't buy talent. I mean, they did. But they didn't buy talent that's going to bring people to come watch this product, necessarily. So, there's that. And, you know, now the tour's got to go figure everything out. They decided who their non-Saudi partner is going to be, which is this group called Strategic Sports Group. A ton of billionaires who are sports owners in different American sports franchises and abroad. And they're collectively probably on paper worth $100 billion, you know, something like a seventh or eighth of the Saudi's public investment fund. But nevertheless, that's the where we find ourselves here. And, yeah, that's the next step. And they'll either figure it out or they won't. And we talked about the machinations of that too at the first. But I think this was a watershed moment, not in the fight for the PGA Tour and LIV around professional golf. I don't really think that was it at all. I think this was a watershed moment for how the public feels about professional golf. Because as we've talked about over many different times over the years, of the 16 years of the FedEx Cup, 17 years of the FedEx Cup, the money never mattered. The people don't watch golf for the money. They don't. They watch golf when they watch golf because they're interested in the players competing and they want to see the best golfers in the world play great golf on some of the best courses, some of the toughest tests in the championships that have close to a century of history, maybe a century or more of history, but that we have identified as a culture that crowned the best champions. And that has been always it. Not, oh, well, they're going to make 15 million, 10 million, 20 million, 4 million. That most people don't understand that and don't care how much money someone else is making. I think that's why people have also kind of been somewhat sympathetic toward Rahm, of the ones who have been, oh, good for him, you know, that's great, I would take that money too, blah, blah, blah. Because most people can't fathom that amount of money. So that's like the one thing that they can empathize with, of, well, you know, if you offer me $300 million, I would do it too. But week to week, you're like, oh, $1.8 million to the winner, $1.9 million to the winner. That's doesn't register with people, not enough people. And so there's been this decades-long disconnect now between elevating purses and raising the stakes in bonus pools and all this money that can go to different people. No one cares. No one cares. And now you've almost thrust money so far to the forefront that it blinds the competition piece of it. And you go, okay, well, I don't care that people don't care that it's a signature event that with a $20 million purse. The purse is irrelevant. What is relevant is that you managed to get 35, 36, 40, 45 of the world top 50 together in a single tournament. Did you need the money to do that? Yes. And that's the indictment. That's where it happens. where you go, well, these guys weren't going to play together unless you threw them an insane amount of money. Well, then they're no better. They're no good either. I think that is the fan sentiment here. I think that's what this has provoked in Rahm signing. And then you've got rumors of Tony Finau and Tyrrell Hatton going to live. Finau's got multiple people suing him because of seed money that in a deal that his father apparently made for Tony at the beginning of his professional career, something like they want like 20% of his earnings, which is insane. But I don't know enough of the details about that to be able to say one way or the other, whether that's a legit thing or an illegitimate thing. You've got Hatton, who doesn't really have an allegiance to anybody, it seems like, except whatever he wants to do. And you're going to have this cascading effect that ultimately is going to have to either result in some kind of an agreement, a capitulation, or, this thing goes on forever and everyone goes away. No one's winning. No one won. The Saudis might have won, but they lost too. And that, I cannot underscore enough. This was not where someone wins or everyone wins. Everyone lost here. Everyone. Because, yes, we talked about money a minute ago. All the players who signed with LIV, who got enormous multiples on what they're actually worth in a legitimate marketplace, yes, they made a ton of money. Guess what? People hate them forever because of that one choice. Not all people, but there are a lot of people who will now not like you. If you thought you were likable before, Phil, Rahm, to a degree, now people are going to be like, you sold out. You ruined the sport people love because you wanted more money. That makes you a loser. You didn't come out net ahead, no way behind. You came out financially ahead, but that only takes you so far. If the PGA Tour signs this agreement, it doesn't come out ahead because, yes, it got financial investment, but at what price? What price of fan loyalty, player loyalty, trust, respect? I don't know the situation Jay Monahan's going to find himself a year from now, but it really seems difficult to believe that whatever the end deal is, he's going to wind up being the CEO of this new company. I don't even know how that's going to be possible. Probably will, just knowing how things have worked out. But how does that even happen? And then you've got the Saudis, which, yes, they will have spent an insane amount of money in the end, whether that's with the PGA Tour or under themselves. They will have spent in upwards of $10 billion probably by the time this is all finished. And what will they have gotten? They will have just upset people. They will have just created a product that not as many people as they probably hope watch. That even if they get a foot in the door of the PGA Tour, they've nerfed that audience to a degree too. So they didn't make the pie bigger, they made it smaller. No one wins. And I think that's the point where a lot of people are fed up with golf have reached. No one's won here, but the clearest losers are the fans, are the people who watch the product. Because you have two split products, you have one a lot of people don't like, for whatever reason, people don't like the shotgun starter, the 54 holes, or the music blaring, or the money involved. They don't like that. On the PGA Tour, they don't like that people are missing. They don't like that it's kind of bland. Some don't apparently like that now they've created a schedule where the top players are clearly basically running their own tour while everyone else is kind of competing for opportunities to nibble at it. There's some upset folks about that. So no one won. No one won. And if it continues on, no one's going to win for however long it lasts. Everyone lost something. And I think for most people involved, or most entities involved, that's irretrievable. At least within a generation. Your reputation, you're not going to fix quickly and easily with a deal. Nobody involved will. None of the players, not the PGA Tour, not LIV, not the Saudis, none of that. The money can spend itself, but it's money. It can be spent. So it's not forever. I mean, if you hold on to it right, if you're Rahm or Dustin Johnson, that's generational, can handle incredible amounts of money for the the rest of their natural lives. But guess what? We're all going to die, so that's not permanent either. So what happened here? At what cost? And I think that's the biggest piece of this to me, is just the end result of no one winning. And that makes me really sad. I've spent 20 years talking about this game in some fashion to the public, whether that's through a show like this, or writing, or video, or whatever it is. And I don't think I've ever been this upset. And I don't know if I ever will be again about all of it. Not because, I should step back and say it's because I have a personal reason, right? I mean, at this point, I've been working in golf professionally for 13 years. I own my own company in golf. I have a stake, however indirect, in the health of professional golf and recreational golf, right? I have a financial stake in that. I got to acknowledge that. But even when I didn't, or even when someone else was paying me to cover golf, I never felt quite this level of disdain and anger and disappointment. And I know that there are Liv supporters out there cry more. Oh, it's great. Well, guess what? Even if you are pro Liv, and you're welcome to do that, right? Everyone has their own opinions. We're all better off when we have the ability to come together when we don't agree. Totally fine if you like Liv Golf. But even if you're of that attitude, the cry more attitude, you lose too. Because you don't have all the best players together either. You might be rooting for a product you like. But wouldn't you like Liv more if now that they're going to have 13 teams and 52 players, that instead of having like 10 guys that can win, you had 35 guys that could win? I mean, if that's what comes of this, that there's a super league in the end, I think more people will kind of deal with it. But right now, even the Liv fan loses. Because they're not getting the best product that they could hope for. And what they're hoping for, if they're hoping for a better product, will cost billions more. Billions more. Because if you want the best players, the precedent's been set. So you don't win either. No one wins. And it's okay if you like Liv. I've said it before. I don't agree with you. I don't agree with that stance, but you're welcome to that. And that's all right. But we all lost. And if you step back and think about it, instead of arguing about groups of people who frankly don't care about us, then the us fans, they don't care. If you realize they don't care, then it's way easier to talk about it candidly. And that's where we're at with it. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be back right after this. If you're like me, you've wanted to buy gold for years. Lots of commercials out there, but who can you really trust? I don't want a bad investment, but didn't want to miss the boat either. Sound familiar? Fortunately, I've got great news. If you have an IRA or 401k and want to buy physical gold, eliminate fear and uncertainty from the process using the new Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist. It helps you evaluate and choose the best gold IRA company. I used it personally to vet Augusta Precious Metals, and they are absolutely phenomenal. Use this checklist to choose the best gold IRA company. Text to get your free Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist today. Text GOLF to 68592. Again, text GOLF to 68592. That's GOLF to 68592. Or go to AugustaPreciousMetals.com. All right, I kind of wanted to talk in the second segment to not be a total downer of the show. Focus the anchor on the first segment, what's happening in golf, and hopefully channel that a little bit, but also kind of talk a little bit about just not a year in review. That would be like a full show, not a professional golf year in review. Just, I've been spending some time trying to think more about the things that have brought me joy in golf, right? Obviously, the professional game has kind of gotten to this not great point, and frankly, a terrible point. And that has made me think a lot over the last 2 years, but especially the last 6 months or so, about why I love golf and what keeps me connected to the game and why I love the recreational game as much as I ever have, even as I'm falling out of love, and maybe I'm out of love, and I've said that before, with professional golf and whatever happens to that part that's getting fixed, at least men's professional golf. And so I kind of wanted to think through my year golf-wise and just the things I'm thankful for, happy about, just playing the game. And I think it has to start with being able to go to Ireland and play golf over there. I got a call in the end of January. I'd just come home from the PGA Merchandise Show. I saw my buddy Brendan Sweeney at a PR firm's party, a buddy of mine's PR firm's party. And we had talked about a bunch of stuff and just kind of took a moment to say, you know, I was grateful for his support over the years and what it's meant to GNN. And he wound up giving me a call and said, hey, you want to go to Ireland this summer? And I said, well, yeah, I would love to, but why are you asking me, kind of deal? And he explained that he had organized a trip and had been kind of pitching a trip, and that it had finally come to pass. And he wanted to see if he wanted me to work with him on creating content to highlight the trip. And we would get, you know, more details as time went on, but that we would have to have a phone call and maybe a Zoom call kind of thing to kind of talk through what we would want to do and when we could do it and those types of things. And he, you know, we had a great call. We met Tiernan Byrne from Club Choice Ireland and had a great conversation, really got the trip going. And ultimately, we got to spend the better part of 10 days together playing six rounds of golf around Ireland, learning to bond through the traumatic experience, at least especially for Brendan, of learning to drive on the wrong, what we would feel is the wrong side of the road instead of the right on the left, and getting to experience incredible golf, great people, seeing everything that part of Ireland, the ancient East is what they call it, but the area just a little north of Dublin, a little south of Dublin, kind of along that part of the coast, has to offer. And I mean, they just put together, so the folks at Club Choice Ireland hired a guy named Shane, and Shane was awesome. He came with us for a number of our rounds, not all of them, but a bunch of them, you know, 2/3 of them, and shot footage of us playing and the things that we saw. So like the Hook Lighthouse, Power Score Distillery, all kinds of different things. And I really, really loved getting to know those guys and everyone that we met, getting to spend more time with Brendan. Yeah, we had a lot of Guinness, but honestly, that wasn't even really the most important part. It was getting to experience something new, but that felt familiar, and getting to not only play golf, but to experience Ireland, getting to know people who wouldn't have cared who we were, why we were there. Just, we were Americans in Ireland. We wanted to talk and get to know people, and they were wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And that's probably the highlight of my golf year, my golf decade, getting to do that trip. But the second, in terms of just pure experience, I mean, just a pure travel experience, not the golf piece of it, because I'm plenty golf on the trip, but it's golf related and thanks to golf, was being able to go and do the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup this year. When I knew that those events would be played back to back in Europe, basically a week apart, I knew I had to do it. And I knew that I wanted to bring my wife and that we could go do this together. And we went and did Spain. We saw Madrid. We went into the Costa del Sol and Malaga, which, oh man, that was so cool. I can't wait to go back to Madrid. I felt like I had just scratched the surface, and we ran around the city as quickly as we could to find and see as many things that we could do. I would love 2 or 3 more days. Man, I wish. But then to go see Costa del Sol, which was so much fun. The Solheim Cup was a great experience. I know that there were logistical issues that were picked apart, and yes, all that's true. But the event itself was tremendous and wonderful, and it was my first introduction to an out of the US experience in a team competition. Great, just great. I can't wait for it to be here next year in the Northern Virginia area. And then to be able to go to, this is not golf at all, but to take a day, go out of the way, go to Germany, go to Munich, go to Oktoberfest, remember most of it, and just the thrill that it was to do that. Something that I've wanted to do for a long time. I've had friends who have done it and have said that how much they enjoyed it. And I would have liked more time in Munich. I can't wait to go back to Germany. I would love to see many more parts of Germany, whether that's playing golf or not. And then the Ryder Cup in Rome. I really wasn't sure what to expect in terms of how it was all going to work. I mean, you hear as an American and maybe from other European folks how dysfunctional the Italian government is and how things don't work. And, you know, you'll be lucky if the trains run on time and all that stuff. And actually, we kind of were. There was supposed to be a labor strike that week, but they postponed it. And Rome, at the same time, hear about how amazing it is to be there, how wonderful Rome is, how wonderful the rest of the country is, and how you'll never forget it. You'll want to go back. You'll barely scratch the surface. You'll wish you had missed everything. And that those people were absolutely correct. I mean, I cannot believe how much I loved Rome. And it had nothing to do with playing golf, but the Ryder Cup was very well done, very well presented, very well embraced. The Italians ran a great show. Buses ran on time. All of the, I mean, not everyone had that experience, but the metro system was great. I could have spent a month in Rome and not felt like I had done enough. And I can't wait for that opportunity again, hopefully. Hopefully to take my children and go see that someday. And those are obviously the kind of two big highlights, right? I mean, how can you not put those at the top of the list? However, I had some other accomplishments this year that I was and other opportunities that I really, really liked. And obviously the first, well, it's not obvious, but it's going to sound obvious in the end. I wound up joining Old Barnwell, and I might have talked about that before, and I'm not trying to advertise that a whole lot. I mean, I'm happy to host people who might be aware of Old Barnwell or might want to play it or can make it possible if it all lines up. But I say that because Old Barnwell's been very well received, but I had no idea when I joined what exactly I was getting into. I visited the site. I knew from then kind of what the development would look like, at least some of it. And I can remember getting in a gator, you know, one of those gator vehicles, and just driving all over the property and seeing, you know, oh, well, this is going to be a tee and that's going to be a green and this is what that hole is going to look like. And you kind of had to picture in your brain what that actually meant, because the trees hadn't been cleared or the earth hadn't been moved. You had an idea, but you really didn't have an idea. But most important to what drew me to the club was this idea of a different kind of golf club. One that had a membership that was more representative. One that welcomed a wider swath of people. That had more female members. That had younger and older members. That had people who were local and national. Different parts of the country. Different golf experiences. I mean, some people in these kinds of situations are members of 3, 4, 5, 6 clubs. And some people who are members, and that's true here, and some people have never joined a club in their entire life, and they just got in the game and it just kind of happened to find the right place at the right time. I love that. I love that there's a community around the club. And then to be able to experience the first 7 holes, that was really a 2022 thing. Well, really, 2023 thing, when they opened at the end of 2022, those 7 holes, but I didn't get to experience until the spring. And just the joy to be able to just play those and to feel like you had something, you knew it was going to be really good. And then to come back just about a month ago and play all 18 and just get to experience what you kind of had thought what it would be like. And I've never had that opportunity before. to see a place from its, not quite inception, but early stages of development to a preview to a full-blown course, and there'll be so much more to come there. But to get to feel that journey was really cool to be an absolutely minuscule part of it compared to the people who have lived that the last few years and what that has probably meant to them, the either stress that's brought them, the pride that's brought them, and then to see it so well received in the architecture community, and to realize you've got an incredible thing here. That those kind of two experiences, one in the spring and one in the fall, are so cool. So cool. And then to be able to have the round of my life. I had two kind of quote-unquote rounds of my life this year. And one was over 9 holes at French Lick. Played the Valley course, which I had not played until this trip. But they have 3 courses at French Lick. Well, now that they're going to have 4 because they're going to have a short course. But to have 3 courses, and you know, I played the Ross, played the Dye, loved them both for different reasons, but never really played the Valley. But when we went, had a GNN trip there a couple years ago, a couple of the guys broke away and went and played, and they were like, this is our favorite course. Like, this is old school golf. There's nothing flashy. It's just fun. It's special. It's got a different kind of vibe to it, and they were right. And we played a couple different times, and I shot 30. I never shot 30 or less for 9 holes. Made a birdie on the last, and I knew it. I was like, if I make a birdie here, I shoot 30. And put a drive in the fairway, left a wedge in, wedged it to 5 or 6 feet. It might have even been less than that, but whatever it was enough to make the putt and shoot 30. And then that was about a month after I'd shot my lowest score ever, which was 64 at Kingsmill. They have 2 courses there as well. They have the Dye course, and then they have the Arnold Palmer course. The Palmer course is a little shorter, a little tighter also, but it plays more like a par 69, 68, especially if you're a longer player. And to be able to go shoot 64 there, and yeah, it didn't really help the handicap much, but to shoot 64 there was crazy. I've had dreams of shooting below 65 and playing golf before. I never cracked 66 before. And I beat my best by 2. Now, yeah, I'm going to have a harder time doing that on a longer course, like a Barnwell from the Tips, which is like 7,000. But just to be able to have that opportunity, I thought was really, really special and fun. And that experience reminded me that there's still so many things you can learn and get better at golf. That's why I love golf, that it's always fresh, it's always different, even if you play the same place over and over again. And I used to not believe that for a number of years. For a couple of years, I thought about not being a member of my golf club here in town, Argyle Country Club. And the reason for that was I played it a lot. I mean, so many times. I probably played it at that point 200 times between 9 holes and 6 holes and 18 holes. You know, all those different little rounds come together. Not 18 hole rounds. I don't really get to play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's very rare that I get to do that. So, you know, playing this course so many times, you're like, all right, well, I've kind of done all I can do here. Like, I don't think I can do better than what I've done. And that opinion has changed for a couple of different reasons. One, I'm learning things. I'm still learning things about this golf course. And two, fortunately, our club has gotten into a good financial position in the last 5-6 years. And they are renovating the course. It's going to look significantly different. They're doing it now, which is also really exciting to get to see a place I've played so many times and talked with members and friends alike of what I would do differently, how I would change it, how I would make it better. And they're not doing what I say. That's not the point. They've come up with a plan to make the course better, to make it flow better, the walk better, to kind of move certain cart paths out of play, out of the way, so that you kind of have a pure golf experience. You don't have to worry about clipping a path with your second shot, you know, that type of thing. And the course is already better. It's already looking better, and they're not even done the work yet. To get to see that is really, really cool. And then to also feel like you've got, it's not a totally, they're not doing everything on every hole. Some of the holes are great as they are, and they didn't really need to be touched. But almost every part of the golf course will get some kind of change. And that means it's a new course. It's fundamentally a new course. In many ways, it's not. They're not blowing up greens and stuff like that. Moving bunkers around, taking out bunkers, maybe replacing them with a different kind of bunker or look. Moving some tee boxes around, adding some tee boxes, things like that. Reshaping bunkers. This isn't like a full wholesale change. It is functional, but it's also, from a play standpoint, a lot of bunkers predominantly moving and tree removal. But even that has not been insignificant, has made this course feel new and different and fresh. And again, a reminder of how great golf can be if you're willing to just kind of let time play out. And I like that a lot. And I hope that for people who are local that know me and want to play, they're going to want to come back to Argyle and see what we did and see what the new course looks like and get to enjoy it all over again, all the same. So it's been a really good year golf-wise. I haven't had as much of a chance to go play outside of those things. I mean, those are obviously great trips, but we did French Lick, got to play in a senior LPGA Championship Pro-Am, got to meet and play with Laura Diaz, who is an incredibly gifted player, multiple-time winner of the LPGA, multiple-time Solheim Cup member. The accuracy with which she hits clubs is frighteningly good. I mean, to like a foot kind of level of accuracy where I'm just hoping to hit it within 5 yards or 10 yards of something sometimes. And that was incredible. And then to get to play with Teresa Toscano at the final Epson Tour event for the LPGA, that's been great. She was so much fun to play with, especially once she realized I kind of had a bad start. I didn't play very well probably the first 4 or 5 holes. Played okay, but not great. And then it started to kind of come together, and we made our run. And that was really cool for us to be able to do that as a team and get close and just have so much. I mean, we could not have laughed more in those, whatever, 5 hours it was. It was awesome to be able to do that. So just, I think it's always kind of important to take stock of a year when you get toward the end of it. And that could be in your hobbies, that could be in everything. I mean, I'll do that kind of introspection privately about myself and that kind of stuff. But where GNN is going, I'm also excited about. I've talked about this a little bit on here, but we will be launching Golf News Net TV. That'll be available on streaming services early next year. I'm actually starting to go through the process this week of building the channel, which I don't know all the details behind that because I'm not the tech person. I'm the content guy and maybe the vision guy. But what all that looks like is starting to take shape, and we'll soft launch on some platforms and fully launch probably at the end of the first quarter next year. But there'll be Golf News Net TV next year, which is something I kind of dreamed and can't believe it's actually happening. And so that's what I'm looking forward to next year, at least in a professional basis, and hoping to take that opportunity to make it really special, to be able to build something that you'll want to watch, that you as someone who loves golf and me as someone who loves golf will want to watch and will be representative of our game, at a professional level, at a recreational level, and represents the variety of stakeholders that we have in this game. And does it service, does it justice. So looking forward to that very much next year. We'll go ahead and take a break. Thanks for letting me be self-indulgent for 15 minutes or so. But I would love to actually hear what you love most about golf this year. What you've experienced in the game and what brings you joy and what brings you frustration. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Find me on social media @RyanBalaji. Love talking with people all the time. We'll be back right after this with our interview for the week. Welcome back, everybody. One final segment this week in our penultimate show of the year, a word I really, really loved about 7 or 8 years ago. Kind of trying to fall back in love with it, maybe. But anyhow, our interview for this week is with Mark Wang, and he is the president and chief executive officer of Hilton Grand Vacations. And they are having their media day when we're recording this down at Lake Nona in Orlando. And Mark joined me to talk about their tournament, which is the kickoff on the LPGA schedule. The Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions was originally the Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions. Then Hilton acquired Diamond Resorts, took over the sponsorship of this. This is their third year for that tournament now. And it has now got a pair. They have this tournament to kick off of the year in Orlando. Then they'll have another tournament in Florida. So it should help them get more players in this event, which is designed to welcome only players who have won in the last 24 months, last two full LPGA seasons, their version of the Tournament of Champions, and then have a celebrity component, and they have a concert series this year we wanted to talk about, but wanted to have something kind of uplifting, feeling good, something to look forward to, and maybe in the course of this show go from something that was not so pleasant to hopeful and looking back, you know, kind of reflective, and to something that's looking forward. So please enjoy this interview with Mark Wang. Mark Wang joins us. He is the president and CEO of Hilton Grand Vacations, and he is joining us from Lake Nona Golf and Country Club in the Orlando area, which is host site to the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions, a kickoff event on the LPGA schedule. And Mark, thank you for being here with us. Can you kind of give us a sense of how, from your level, the Tournament of Champions has grown since Hilton Grand Vacations' involvement with it, and how it's kind of picked up steam as an important event on the LPGA schedule?
Sure. Yeah. So, as you know, we took over the tournament back 3 years ago. This will be our third year, and I think very, very fortunate that we were able to work with Tavistock and Lake Nona Golf and Country Club to move the venue to this amazing championship course. And so I think first of all, I think the venue is first class, and I know from speaking to the players, both the LPGA players and the celebrities, they really love the course, the way it's set up, and I understand the course is even looking better this year than it did last year. So excited to see you know how everything plays out. But for us, it's an important event. You know, we have this Ultimate Access platform where we're providing not only great hospitality, but for us, creating really unique experiences. And Tournament Champions is really our premier event. And we launch in January 18th. And, you know, it's gotten bigger and better every year. The entertainment's gotten better during the week. It's not just about golf. Well, the main focus during the day, obviously, is golf. But we've got three concerts for our concert series this year. We start off with L. King on Tuesday, and then we move to Styx and REO Speedwagon on Thursday, and then we finish off on Saturday night with Pitbull. So haven't seen Pitbull live, but my understanding, he puts on an amazing show. So super excited for this year's tournament.
How does this tournament act as a vehicle for HGV to kind of show their side of the hospitality business? I mean, fundamentally, that's the association people are trying to make with the brand, the experience they have at the tournament, and the surrounding activity. Hopefully, they associate with Hilton Grand Vacations.
Well, you know, we're known for our hospitality, and that's something that's part of our DNA, and we've been doing, you know, and providing great hospitality for years. And so... With the Tournament Champions, really what we're providing now, we're developing these great experiences for our members and our guests, and it really allows our members to get immersed into events that they may not be able to experience on their own. And so we have hospitality suites set up on the golf course where our members only can utilize, and they get to enjoy great food, beverage, but get to watch world-class women from the LPGA play the first tournament of the year. It's a more casual setup and environment for the LPGA with the celebrity tournament running simultaneous to the LPGA event. But let me tell you, I promise you, once you get into the weekend, the girls are really focused. They're all competitors, and they all want to win this event. And you know, last year we saw Brooke Henderson win. Our first year we had Danielle Kang, both super great competitors and great to have as ambassadors, on our trophy now for this tournament.
The LPGA seems to have grown leaps and bounds in a variety of different ways in the last 2-3 years in particular. There's been a lot more money involved in the sport. There's been a lot more attention and viewership. How has this tournament benefited from the general growth of the LPGA in women's professional golf?
Yeah, look, I think, as you said, women's golf is continuing to grow. And I heard one of the representatives from the LPGA say that, you know, the purses next year are going to exceed $120 million. And when you go back to 2012, she mentioned that the purse was $40 million. So there's been tremendous growth and momentum in ladies golf. And I think one of the things that's really driving this growth is just the quality of play. When you look at these players, she also mentioned, once you get past the drive, 150 yards in, the stats are better for the women than they are for the men. These are amazing athletes that are really good at what they do. And we're excited about next year's event because last year on the LPGA was a great year for them. They had 12 new winners last year, which was a record. I think the previous high was 11 new winners in any given year. So got a lot of young, talented women golfers that are moving up the ranks and moving into the LPGA and winning. I'm sure you know Rosang. Her first LPGA event last year she entered, she actually won, which was an amazing feat in itself.
And then on the celebrity component of it, that's become a staple of this event. It's always been a hallmark for the tournament, but it feels like it's kind of developed into its own importance with the players who come back year after year as well. They want to win it just the same as the LPGA players want to win their kickoff event.
Well, a lot of our celebrities are athletes, right? We have celebrities that are, entertainers from the, from the TV world, but especially from the music industry. Everybody's competitive at the end of the day. What we have, though, is you have a field of really talented golfers, and you have a field of golfers, too, that on the celebrity side that are just, they draw a lot of attention to the tournament because these are people that may have not gone out to watch a women's golf event are coming out to see some of their favorite celebrities. And I can't tell you how many times I've run into people over the last couple of years that came out because they were Atlanta Braves fans or, they were fans of Vince Carter on the basketball side. It's really interesting to see the fans that we're drawing in on this tournament. It's not just the golf enthusiasts. It's also the enthusiasts that, grew up with some of these celebrities and were big fans of theirs when they were kids or as adults.
I've kind of seen some of this a couple of times firsthand, but to get professional golfers in the same space as other professional athletes or other celebrities, different walks of life, it seems like the conversation automatically turns into a picking of the brain of what one knows, the other wants to know about, and what the other knows, the other wants to find out about. Have you seen some of that in your personal interactions and just experiencing the tournament over the last couple of years?
Yeah, what's really the feedback I've gotten is that there are a lot of these celebrities that play with the professional women that stay connected during the year through email or Instagram or whatever it might be. So there are relationships that are being built during this tournament. And I think people are picking each other's brains. I know there's definitely a lot of people asking about golf tips out here. And, I'm not sure how helpful that is on the course or not, but obviously these women, they know the game really well. And the celebrities are all trying to get better at it. Though we have a couple handful of celebrity players that are really accomplished golfers too.
Is it helpful for this tournament to now have a pair with it in the back-to-back events to kind of start the year in Florida for the LPGA to kind of have a 1-2 punch and be a lead-off to a couple of event series swing instead of kind of being an event that was not on an island but on its own for at least the start of the year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're really excited about that. It's really important. You know, to get some of the, you know, the champions over the last couple of years to come out from, you know, their home, if they're in Australia or New Zealand or even in Europe, to make their way out here to play an event, then have to wait another, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. That's not necessarily the best setup for them. So the LPGA is doing a good job and working to get that schedule filled out after we kick off our beginning event of the year.
I'll wrap with this. In your time being involved with the tournament as part of it, being the title sponsor, what's the thing that you've most enjoyed and what are you most looking forward to with this year's event?
You know, what I've really enjoyed is I've really enjoyed the interaction between the players, the celebrities, and the fans. You know, these players and celebrities are so gracious with their time. And you see the interactions, you know, from people while they may be outside the ropes. There's conversations that are happening. It's a lot of fun. These ladies are extremely easy to talk to, and they really appreciate the support they're getting out there. And I think the celebrities are really enjoying the fact that they get to play with the best women golfers in the world. So all in all, we think this is a great event. It's a great way to start the year off. And it's a little bit more casual. We're having a lot of fun. But I promise you, once you get into Saturday and Sunday, you can see the fire that starts to build, especially with the women. They all want to win this tournament. This is an event you have to qualify for. You have to be a past winner over the last 24 months. And so this is about celebrating their championships, the fact that they have won championships over the last 2 years. And that's how we want this event to be. We want to celebrate the start of the year and celebrate the past winners.
Well, Mark, thank you for spending some time with us. I really appreciate it. Hopefully it's a great event and not that far from now. We're looking at a month basically until we get things going here again down in Orlando. So thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Great. Super. Thank you.
Thank you again to Mark for being on the show. I very much appreciate it. Again, we're looking forward to the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. I wish I could have been down in there in Orlando for the media day. Lake Nona is a really cool place to play golf. It's a really fun golf course. It's always in fabulous shape, and I'm sure it will be again next month when the LPGA starts their 2024 season there. That's going to do it for us today on the show. Thank you for spending some time with me this week. We'll be back with one more show to end the year next week. Then we won't be back until the first week of January. I hope you have a great holiday season. Whatever it is you celebrate, if it's nothing at all, if it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus, you know, whatever it is, whatever you brings you closer to the people you love the most. And hopefully you get to spend some time with those people over the next few weeks. If you have any questions, want to talk golf, or anything else, email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on every social media service at the handle Ryan Ballingy or Ryan Ballingy Golf if you're looking at Facebook and YouTube. We'll be back with another show next week. Thanks so much for listening to the 19th Hole Golf Show.